Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
It's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Councillor Tracy Height is stepping down in a couple weeks, and so far, four local residents have thrown their hats into the ring to replace her. Andrew Hale, Rachel Swanson, Jason Padden, and Brian M. Deke. We reached out to all four and asked them to tell us a little about themselves and why they'd like to serve on the city council. Andrew Hale is a quality engineer at Milwaukee Electronics in Canby. He's worked at the company for 11 years in a variety of roles, from test tech to interim quality manager. He says that while he has taken some college courses and earned some certifications to help him at work, the bulk of his education he's gained through on-the-job experience. He said he's interested in serving because he grew up in Canby and his family has been part of the community for years. I went to school here and now my kids go to school here too, he said. I've seen Canby grow and change, and that has been good and bad. Really, I want to do more for my family and my community and learn more about the local government. I saw this as an opportunity. Rachel Swanson is an associate director for Cognizant, a multinational digital technology and consulting firm where she works from home helping ensure the stability of healthcare providers' IT platforms. She's also married with two school-age boys and is a newer resident of Canby, having moved here from Portland. She says she has always been invested in government and feels she can make a difference in a small town. I've always been passionate about small town life and I love Canby, she said. I believe we need to keep Canby unique, not an extension of Portland. I want to serve the people of Canby, support small business growth, keep the small town feel while being inclusive to all. Jason Padden is a sales representative for McHutchison Horticultural Distributors and has a long history of service with the city. He served on the Canby City Council from 2009 to 2011, stepping down due to work commitments that at that time required frequent travel and made it difficult to fulfill his obligations to the city. He has also served on the Urban Renewal Committee and been a longtime member of the Budget Committee, serving as chair during the most recent budget process. Previously applied to be reinstated on the council in 2016 following the resignation of Todd Rocha, but local attorney Tyler Smith was appointed to the seat instead. I have and continue to serve the city and Canby community by being involved, he said. I would like to help continue the positive forward movement of the city without partisanship clouding the processes. Finally, Brian M. Deke is a community corrections manager for the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. With more than 20 years of law enforcement experience under his belt, almost all of it with Clackamas County. In his current role, he oversees 53 staff members and an $11 million budget. I believe in helping all citizens of Canby and doing whatever I can to help our community, he said. Canby is an amazing city with tremendous values that I want to see prosper. He said his goals would be to preserve the city's small town feel and downtown area while addressing traffic, budget, and other infrastructure concerns as the city grows. Applications are still being accepted. The deadline to apply is July 5th. Candidates will be interviewed by the remaining members of the City Council during a special session on Wednesday, July 24th at 7 p.m. The new councilor will be sworn in August 7th and will serve until just after the 2020 general election, at which time they or a different candidate would be elected for the remaining 2 years of the term. For details on how to apply, find this story on our website, canbynowpod.com.
Animal rights advocates, you can rejoice. At least one stray cat in town will soon have a permanent home. Canby Area Transit, commonly known as CAT, currently leases temporary office space in a building next to the Wilco store on Hazeldale Way. The city last week agreed to purchase a 1-acre parcel next to the CAT's existing bus yard, which is also located on Hazeldale. The city agreed to buy the land from Pioneer Property, an Oregon LLC domiciled in Kima, Texas, for $380,000. The purchase aligns with the city's long-term planning for transit services, allowing it to eventually construct a permanent home for Cat in close proximity to the existing bus yard. It also locks in the cost of land during a time of escalating real estate values. The city agreed to purchase at last week's city council meeting on first reading. Final approval requires a second reading and vote, which should happen at the July 17th meeting. Pursuant to the contract, the deal is expected to close no later than August 31st.
After an unusually contentious campaign for an off-year May election, the two new members of the Canby School Board were sworn in last week without controversy. Dawn Deppner, who has served on other local boards but called her campaign this year the most contentious she's ever been part of, and Stephanie Carlson, who had actually decided not to run after all but accepted the position when voters elected her anyway, took their oaths and were greeted warmly by their five new colleagues on the school board. They replaced Diane Downs, who announced her retirement after 12 years of service on the board, and Andrea Weber, who had run for a third term but narrowly lost in the runoff with Carlson. The two outgoing members were thanked and complimented profusely by district staff and the other members of the board, including Director Tom Scott.
We're losing a lot of history and knowledge, and that will hurt for a while. They've been great sounding boards for me for the last several years, and I appreciate that. I can tell you that they never wavered in making decisions for kids. And I think that's important. As you sit up here, you can never forget that you're making decisions for kids. And they just represented the community well. So.
Vice Chair Downs got a laugh when she said she had jokingly told her husband the evening would feel like going to her own funeral. And not just her 12 years on the board, but her 27 years as a parent and member of the Canby School District community, she has seen many teachers, many administrators, and many who have served on the board of directors.
Is common to all is an absolute commitment to public education as a calling for all of the students of our community. And as the other board members have said, we've worked together. Board members with whom I served in prior years, we managed to work together, and we represented various passions within the community. But that cohesiveness and singleness of purpose is key. So I'm confident that Canby will continue with that. We've had a long history of good, solid board and community.
In her comments, Andrea Weber said she just wanted to say thank you.
I'd like to say thank you to many people that I've been privileged to serve and assist for not only the 8 years on the school board, but throughout the past 27 years in which I have volunteered in our schools. I want to thank the teachers and the administrators of Caris, who introduced me to parent helping in a kindergarten class and supported me through many other projects, and be district staff and our superintendent, who put so much effort every day into providing the best possible educational experience for our students. Because of their work, I feel that the decisions made by the board will have a long-term positive effect on our school district. And finally, I'd like to thank my fellow board members. I appreciate and respect them for their opinions, their endless engagement throughout the district, their ideas, and most of all, their ability to work together in a cooperative manner. I could not imagine a better group of people to spend time with on a Thursday evening, at least a group more motivated to work for the benefit of all of our students. Thank you very much.
The Canby School Board will hold an organizational meeting next week to elect officers and approve meeting dates and organizational designations for the coming year. The meeting is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. Monday in the Meridian Room at the Ackerman Center.
The city may be eyeing a new location at Maple Street Park for the city's long-awaited Splash Park. Previously penciled in for an area just to the north corner of the park, City Administrator Rick Robinson said officials are now entertaining the idea of removing the old cracked tennis courts and placing the splash pad there.
And the tennis court is four times as big as the splash pad, but we could place it strategically, and that'd give us an opportunity to put some covered seating area between the children's play area and the splash pad, so better visibility for the parents with their children, ability for the children to run back and forth between dry play things and wet play things, and it would keep them close to the activity. So rather than moving them to the north corner, which could have involved removing trees, we think we have a good solution.
Given the poor state of the playing surface, the Maple Street tennis courts are not really usable anyway, at least not without risking serious injury. So Robinson said that this is really a win-win. The city removes a potential hazard that nobody can use and replaces it with something awesome that everybody can use, you know, at least 3 or 4 months out of the year. He said that he has already begun discussions with the city's public works department to demolish and remove the old tennis courts. This would not necessarily be the end of the tennis courts at Maple Street Park, though. Robinson says that there would be plans to build new courts there in a couple years, perhaps with the use of the Park System Development Charge SDC funds. A splash pad has been one of the most requested new features by city residents and park users for years. The project was finally given the green light late last year. And Maple Street, the city's largest park, was selected by the city council after considering several other locations in town. Details like the size, cost, and design of the highly anticipated water feature have not yet been made public, presumably waiting the final decision as to the location. The park is expected to come online in summer of 2020. Police beat for the week of May 28th to June 3rd. On May 28th at 9:10 a.m., report of a home broken into on Southeast 3rd Avenue the previous night. The suspect reportedly smashed a sliding glass door to gain entrance. On May 29th at 2:43 a.m., a vehicle was reported driving in an aggressive and dangerous manner. Officers located the vehicle and made contact with the occupants, all of whom were juveniles. The minors were taken into protective custody for curfew violation. Later that night at 10 p.m., an officer received a report of two men acting suspiciously at a local store. The officer later saw two suspects who matched that description enter a vehicle and drive away at a high rate of speed. As the officer followed, the suspect vehicle's driving became increasingly dangerous. In interest of public safety, the officer felt that he actually had no other choice but to terminate the pursuit. That's crazy. However, officers later located the driver at a residence and took him into custody for attempting to elude police on an outstanding felony warrant. That story is a real roller coaster. Or a high pursuit chase, huh? No, it's a bad joke, never mind. On May 30th at 9:08 a.m., report of a lost wallet. That's actually all it says, so I hope that they find it. Later that night at 11:42 p.m., a traffic stop was conducted on a vehicle swerving in its lane of travel on Southeast Township Road. The driver was arrested and cited for DUI, alcohol, and reckless driving. On May 31st at 8:48 a.m., report of an unknown person opening a wireless account in a victim's name. The victim was alerted to the fraudulent activity after being contacted by a collections agency. On June 2nd at 11:20 p.m., an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration was stopped on South Highway 170. The driver was also had a suspended license. She was cited and her vehicle was towed. And her passenger was also cited for having an open container of alcohol, because why not? Finally, on June 3rd at 9:45 p.m., a juvenile driver was stopped and cited for speeding. Because the officer suspected the driver had also been using marijuana, a parent was called to transport them home. Because who wouldn't love to get that phone call at 9:45 p.m.?
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean, and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability, with a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people.
And also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com. I Hear America Singing by Walt Whitman. I hear America singing, the varied carols I hear, those of mechanics, each one singing his as it should be, blithe and strong. The carpenter singing his as he measures his plank or beam. The mason singing his as he makes ready for work or leaves off work. The boatman singing what belongs to him and his boat. The deckhand singing on the steamboat deck. The shoemaker singing as he sits on his bench. The hatter singing as he stands. The woodcutter's song. The plowboy's on his way in the morning or at noon, intermission, or at sundown. The delicious singing of the mother or of the young wife at work or of the girl sewing or washing. Each singing what belongs to him or her and to none else. The day what belongs to the day. At night, the party of young fellows, robust, friendly, singing with open mouths their strong, melodious songs.
Welcome back, listeners. One of the most looked forward to events every year here in Canby is the Canby Independence Day Celebration. It happens each year on July 4th, which is Independence Day, if you didn't know, here in downtown Canby at Waite Park. I'm here today at Quick Coffee House with Calvin Lesser and Jamie Stickle, the city of Canby, two folks that are very instrumental to putting this on each year. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good. We're excited for next week.
Jamie loves being on the podcast. One of her favorite things. We haven't had her on in like 6 months or so. She helped us launch with one of our first episodes. Was, I think, one of the highlights of your life and career.
You know, I do love being on the podcast. I love the opportunity to talk about the things I love in town. I just get a little nervous.
Well, and the Canby Independence Day is one of those fun things that you guys get to
True.
Do. It's been going over 25 years. I think we figured 28. This is the 28th
yes.
annual celebration.
Yep.
Draws, at least the past couple of years, around 10,000 people, which is crazy. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about maybe the history of it or your experience with it, Jamie.
Yeah. So the city took over the event technically in October of 2015.
Yeah.
2016 was our first year. And so that year, we think we had about 8,000 people come to town. And when we took it over, we were lucky enough that at the time we had a Rare AmeriCorps participant. So Rare is, you know.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Resource Assistance for Rural Environments, as I recall.
Yes, good job.
And Calvin is only here to do the acronyms. Thank you for doing your job. You have one job.
Thank you. And so she and I really just took this on, and we immediately pulled together community groups, people from different organizations, different citizens, businesses, people who are excited to help participate and make sure that it continued on. And I think we really impressed the community with the short amount of time that we had to plan with what we were able to do. And then we've just built on that success year after year.
Yeah. Cool. And it's one of those things that, like, obviously, like, even the first year, like, around 8,000 people, like, it's something that that draws people and that people get excited about. But maybe people don't realize necessarily, like, all of the work and planning it takes to make something like that happen.
Totally. Definitely. And I think also, you know, we actually, on our side, we actually have the fact that people are just used to coming down on the 4th of July. So, you know, we were able to really fine-tune things and get other businesses involved. But people are used to coming down and having things happen. We were lucky enough that we were able to refine some things, add some things, like we added a beer garden and we added extra kids' activities so that we could really give people options to come downtown.
Did you guys add the inflatables? Because that's the only reason my kids go. Like, they, as far as they're concerned, it's inflatable day. Like, they have no idea what the United States Independence thing is all about.
Yeah, we did added the inflatables, and we also have an arcade truck that comes that has like 14 stations.
Oh.
And other than our tie-dye booth, all of the activities are free for kids to participate in.
Yeah.
So that every kid can come downtown on that day and have the same experience, which is really important to us, and it's something that I'm very proud of for our event.
And Frankie, you can let your kids know that this year we've got an inflatable bouncy house as well as an inflatable obstacle course.
That'll be very
exciting to run through.
And if you guys could just, I know you keep them separated for a reason, but like just for me, if you could put the beer garden right next to the inflatables, like that would just make it great for our family. So
come to the big night out. You can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
I can do that, I guess. So what else is going on for this year's event? Obviously the parade is a big part of it, which happens, in my opinion, way too early, but I know there's a reason for it.
So parade kicks off promptly at 10 a.m.
So early.
It is
to beat the heat, right?
Like it's to beat the heat,
yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
In addition to the bouncy house and obstacle course for kids' activities, the Canby Fire District sets up their own obstacle course, maybe sort of firefighter skills course for kids. So we have some adorable photos of a little boy wielding a very large hammer and knocking blocks, and then they get to man the fire hose.
And that happens on North Grant, right in front of Ebner's.
Okay.
So the street's closed off right
cool.
there. Yeah.
And yes, arcade truck is coming back. And then we're really trying to promote our beer garden this year. So we have two great acts coming. That would be Cool Change at the early slot, so 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the beer garden on Northwest 2nd Ave, right in front of the former Parsons building downtown. And then following them from 2 to 5 p.m., it's Brady Goss, his band, so a four-piece sort of rock and more modern music.
He has
whereas
quite a following. I hear a lot.
Yeah, right. And he was just at Wine, Food, and Brew.
Yeah.
He's quite the musician.
Yeah. Awesome.
And this is with his full band, so that's 2 to 5 p.m. at the Beer Garden stage. And we want to get the word out that it's...
Where's the Beer Garden going
to be? Northwest 2nd Ave. Okay. So just in front, between Parsons and Clackamas Federal Call Center there.
Okay. Cool.
Right by the backstop downtown.
Yeah.
And it's a family-friendly beer garden.
Yes.
So you can bring your kids in. It's a really relaxed day. We've got some fun activities in there, just, you know, kind of yard games that you can play. And then you can buy food, buy beer and wine.
So Ebner's Custom Meats is providing the beer, wine, and you can get their smoked sausage sandwiches and pulled pork sandwiches. So that'll be a fun time.
Yeah.
Other than that, so the day kicks off with the Canby Historical Society fundraiser pancake breakfast at Knight Elementary, and that's from 7 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. So a good wide range for the early risers and the not-so-early risers can get pancakes and support Historical Society, the Depot Museum, that is.
Yeah, that's always fun. I think that's one of their bigger fundraisers.
Really
good breakfast, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good. And then the car show, which happens on Grant Street between 4th and 6th, so basically right next to the pancake breakfast there at Knight Elementary. The car show will be going on from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Okay.
With awards at 2 p.m. at the gazebo stage in Waite Park.
About how many cars are you expecting?
Our sweet spot for the car show is about 75 cars. years. And
awesome.
Yeah, there's always some really, really great cars showing. And I just really want to thank our car show sponsor, which is Canby Ford. Mm-hmm. So a huge thanks to them, because we couldn't do it without their support.
There's different prizes and things that happen with the parade as well, right?
Yes. So the parade, as we said, kicks off at 10 a.m. And then we do a parade award ceremony at noon in Waite Park. Yes.
Cool. And those categories are most unique, mayor's choice, royalty choice, best adult float, and then best kid float.
Oh, cool.
So it gives, I think what we carried on from General Canby Days, but it's been really fun to see who's won, and people get really excited. They come up and check, and they want to make sure that if their float won, that they right. know about it. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a really fun
Especially
time.
Especially the kids probably.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
So into it.
Yeah, I think last year a float was the, that one for the kids was a cat float.
Yeah.
So they had decorated the whole thing with like cat toys on the outside. Yeah. It was awesome.
Cool. Yeah. We walked in the parade with my daughter's preschool last year, and they got all dressed up. We had like the wagon that we decorated and whatnot, you know. And they wanted to walk for about like half a block, and then I was pulling them in the heat for the rest of the day. So that was fun. But
yeah.
It's much longer than it seems when you're just standing in one spot and watching it. So.
We did drive the route. It is a mile and a half.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, actually considerably shorter than Malala's parade route.
Well, I'm not doing Malala's parade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so come on down for the easy parade.
Right. And a little bit harder when it's a mile and a half pulling kids.
You're
but,
dragging 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
They grow every year, too. It's just going to get harder.
Bigger, I know. So, Calvin, this is your first year. They always make the new person with the city do the 4th of July event. So,
that's right.
Has it been kind of similar, the process, as far as organizing other events? Have you looked to kind of put your own flavor on it, or just kind of not screw anything up?
Right. Well, fair enough. Yeah, we're not changing much this year.
Sure.
So I'm sticking with what we've been doing. I'm just really impressed. There's so many volunteers that are stepping up to help out, both in terms of planning and day of. So that's been really amazing, and part of what is constantly awesome about working in Canby is all the citizen participation and great volunteers that help out with planning. But yeah, it's a big event, and we're doing we've been doing lots of planning for it. So
sure. Jamie, you've kind of been around for a little bit longer, and I was well, like this event is something I look forward to every year, because I love 4th of July and Independence Day anyway, and the history and what it means for our country, but like for Canby and just seeing the whole community come out, all the different food vendors and things. I am like way too obsessed with carnival food. Like I've been blessed with enough metabolism that I don't probably weigh 400 pounds like I should, but like I could just eat that kind of stuff all day. Like I just love that. But I love seeing all the different cultures, the different people just having a good time, all the different kids playing together and stuff. And I feel like this event has a big history in our town, and people love it for that reason because of the nostalgia and stuff as well, but I feel like that's a big part of it. It's just that everyone enjoys that as well, just seeing people come together and having fun with each other.
Yeah, I think that I would agree with everything that you said. I've been here for 7 years, and I always came down for the parade, and I did the street fair. I did not know until I took it over that there was a car show involved. I didn't know about the great work that the Historical Society and the Fire District do of coming out and providing something else, another offering for our community. And so, yeah, it's just a super, super fun event, and I think that people love to see what changes, what doesn't change. It, you can come down, and doesn't matter what your background is or what your ethnicity is, you can come down and celebrate and listen to music and watch the parade, and it's just, I think, one of the days in Canby that make Canby such a great place to live and to visit.
Yeah. And adding to that, just the fact that it's in Waite Park, which is part of this amazing downtown historic district. Well, not district, but as there's crazy history in Waite Park, and in fact you can read all about it in the new Visit Canby kiosk. There's some fresh information up there on the history of Waite Park. And just, it's that classic small town gazebo in the middle of a shady park. That really makes it a special place to celebrate, and this event really highlights that part of our community, which is so nice.
Yeah, well, I'm not supposed to admit this, but I'm not from Canby. I'm from the South, and in Kentucky, like every single town in Kentucky has a central park and a central square. Mm-hmm, like they're usually called Central Park. Ours was called Central Park. And it's like the central square, and there's a courthouse, and you know,
sort of like the plazas in Latin America.
Yeah, Oregon is different, but like Canby has that, and it reminds me of my childhood of parades and just seeing the people like lining the streets with their camp chairs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it brings me back, even though I'm not from here, and I just love that.
So. Yeah, it's good. It's a good day. It is small town America at its best, and we don't have to drive far to see it. We just have to get to downtown and participate. And it's a great day.
So it's happening next week, all day, July 4th. The parade starts at 10 a.m. Everything else goes until...
Well, in downtown Canby, until about 5 p.m. is when the music stops in the beer garden. There is also,
when the party stops, when the beer garden.
That's right.
Then you just head into the backstop.
No, but I'll mention, well, first of all, the backstop will be open until about 3 p.m. And many of our downtown businesses will be open, so be sure to visit Retro Revival, the Book Nook, the backstop. Tappy's will be open.
Gwyn's going to be open.
Gwyn's Coffee House. And thank you actually to Gwyn's for being a sponsor. They're helping keep our volunteers caffeinated this year.
Very important.
Yes. And actually,
especially because I'm volunteering, I need some extra coffee.
Right.
A little energy.
Yeah.
And I think you specifically asked them to.
Also, thanks to Canby Rental Equipment. They provide a lot of tables and chairs for us. Huge help. And Oliver Insurance is a big supporter, especially of the kids' activities. They make all that possible.
Yeah. City of Canby Police Department, probably.
Yeah, the police.
Public Works.
Public Works, of course. They're a huge help. And then Canby Herald also helps us get the word out.
I'm not allowed to talk about the Canby
Herald. Oh, okay. Right. Slice of Summer generously sponsors our gazebo stage. And Return Flight will be back this year performing on that stage from 12 to 4.
Very
so all
appropriately
after
named.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Coming back.
And they're awesome. They're an 11-piece band that comes and just rocks. And they're so fun. They're so so engaging. I remember they've been back. I think this is their third year back. But they always bring something new. And so I'm super excited to get to be in the park and have a little extra time to listen to them this year.
Mm-hmm. And then really, though, the festivities continue. Over at Trost Elementary, there's the Canby Fire District Community Fireworks Show.
Oh, right.
At dusk. Yeah. Right? So be safe getting over there, and then be sure to support the fire district, because it's the volunteer firefighters that put that on, and they're always fundraising. They really want to make it bigger and better every year, so keeping that momentum going. It makes a safer environment for all of Canby if there's one central fireworks show that's professionally managed.
Yeah. Sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
Okay, on that well, thank you guys so much for telling us about it. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, as it always is. And we're looking forward to seeing you guys out there.
Thank you, Frankie.
Sounds good.
See
Thanks.
You there.
For someone who enjoys a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region, and it can be a little overwhelming, but it's also exciting, if you have the right guide.
That's why we love visiting the FOB Taproom in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beer, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles. And their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB.
Hey, Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
Spider-Man Far From Home is my new favorite Spider-Man movie. Of course, I also said that about the last Spider-Man movie I saw. And then the Spider-Man movie I saw before that. And then the one before that, Amazing Spider-Man. So I don't think it's unusual for me to be absolutely in love with Spider-Man movies. So there's not much to go off of there. I'm sitting in the dark, by the way, recording on an old Tascam recorder because while I was at the movie theater, a storm came through and completely turned off all the power in my home. So I can't even write out my review at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night as I sit by the candlelight talking to you folks about my review. But here it is. The first Spider-Man movie that was based in the Marvel MCU was awesome. It had an actual young person playing Spider-Man, which is my favorite era of Spider-Man stuff. And it had a great twist and villain. I'm pretty sure I did a review for it a long time ago. And this one, it feels like really closed a chapter for the Avengers series. So if you're looking for something to kind of follow up your viewing of Endgame, this is 100% the next movie you should watch. Spider-Man always seems to take an outside view in the MCU as a character who's observing what effects the Avengers have on the world around them. And they use that tool quite a bit in this movie. You get to see what life is like after what's called the blip. People who have died, or not died, faded, and come back. Spoilers, sorry, if you haven't seen the Avengers Endgame. I really like this movie just because I really like Spider-Man. I think that's obvious now. I don't mean to repeat myself, but I mean, I do. I like Spider-Man and his character. I like his relationships with his friends. I like the struggle of him looking for a new mentor, someone to lead him and show him how to do things right. And in the first Spider-Man movie, we had Tony Stark, who we know is a flawed person trying to do his best. And in this case, we have someone who's doing a really good job and might not be the best. And so with this movie, we really get to see kind of the opposite effect. Spider-Man doesn't feel guilty for not living up to the high standards that are set by his hero, literally, Iron Man. Rather, we see him struggling with what other people want him to be. And I think that's a really cool struggle. I really liked that. So, since the last Spider-Man movie, which was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and that was my favorite Spider-Man movie, this one is definitely my new favorite. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Spider-Verse is still my favorite. It does have Jake Johnson voicing Spider-Man, which is always going to live in infamy. It's going to be good for me, not infamy. It's going to be great for me. So if you're looking for a great way to kind of get some closure to the cinematic universe of the Avengers after everything that happened in Endgame, I would definitely recommend hanging out with Peter Parker. If you're looking for just a fun superhero movie that doesn't have a sky portal like all the other ones, I'd also recommend this. If you're looking for a Spider-Man movie that gets out of its own drama and New York City, this series has done a really good job so far, and they keep it up. So I think you should definitely check it out. If you're looking to hang out with friends and maybe tell that girl that you like that you finally like her, then maybe use this as an opportunity to do that. I know I did. And when I told my wife that I really liked her, she was pretty surprised that it took me 14 years to say so.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. Old Bill Brown, one of the most colorful figures of the Frontier West, who grew up on a New Era farm just outside of Canby, made his early fortune raising enormous herds of wild horses and selling them at a premium to the armies of the United States and our allies. But war of a less profitable sort broke out in 1895, a range war between sheep herders and cattlemen. It came to be known as the Sheep Shooters' War, and it would rage for more than a decade. Historians say it started with the cattlemen, who refused to share open range with sheep herders due to concerns about overgrazing. They formed paramilitary organizations that came to be called the Sheep Shooters, and they were known to slaughter entire flocks of sheep and anyone else who got in their way. They would often kill hundreds or even thousands of sheep in a single raid. I guess you could say they had some serious beef. To be fair, the cattle barons had gotten there first. For many years, they had held monopolies over enormous swaths of open range in the state's interior. When the sheep herders started moving in, it felt to them like encroachment. Plus, the sheep used the land differently, or so they said. Cows are picky eaters. They steer away from anything unpleasant, like weeds, which hold down the topsoil and let the grass regrow. When a large herd of sheep go through an area, on the other hand, they leave behind nothing but dirt. Some claim that the sheep stunk badly, leaving behind smelly fields cattle will no longer enter. Snooty cows. They also said sheep, which they called meadow maggots, were polluting the watering holes and making their stock sick. Calling themselves the Izzy Sheep Shooters, named for the IZ brand used by cattle baron M.N. Bonham, the first group of armed enforcers came together in Grant County in 1895. They wore masks and waged an intimidation campaign that proved very successful. The trend soon spread as new groups formed and established deadlines across wide areas of central and eastern Oregon. The deadlines, or death lines, as they would later be known, were marked with tree blazes, stripping bark off of one side of a tree, pieces of tin nailed to trees, or strips of cloth from worn-out saddle blankets. Later, written signs were posted, such as this one, "Warning to sheepmen, you are hereby ordered to keep your sheep on the north side of the plainly marked line, or you will suffer the consequences." Signed, Inland Sheep Shooters. These signs probably would have been more helpful if not for the fact that very few sheep tenders could read. Occasionally, one would have the cloth signs read to him and word spread not to go beyond the talking paper. Any flock caught on the wrong side of these boundaries would be subject to immediate slaughter, and the sheep herder, if caught, could face death as well, though often they were only beaten and let go. One story tells of a shepherd who was cornered by three armed cowboys and forced to walk around his flock on hands and knees, bleeding like a sheep. I guess he didn't find it funny because he got his horse and his rifle and rode the man down, killing one, wounding another, and capturing the third. The worst of the violence was in the high desert, Old Bill's country. The cattle and sheepmen in this area were forced into conflict by the 1898 expansion of the Cascade Range Forest Reserve, which took away thousands of acres sheep herders had peacefully used to graze their animals. Many headed to the Blue Mountains, where the cattle barons were king. Before 1880, there were virtually no sheep east of the Cascades. By 1896, there were over 300,000 in Crook County alone, compared to 40,000 cattle. By the year 1900, over 2.5 million sheep would crowd the slopes of eastern Oregon's grazing lands. In some locations, there are as many as 450 sheep per acre, pasturing in the same spot for up to 4 months. One of the largest sheep massacres occurred in 1903 on the high desert near Benjamin Lake. Nearly 2,400 were herded off the high basalt cliffs to fall to their deaths. This was a popular method of slaughter mainly because it saved ammunition, though any sheep who survived the fall were quickly shot. They called it rimrocking. For the most part, Bill's herds escaped the slaughter, mainly because by then his operation was so large and his land holdings so vast that it rarely brought him into contact with other ranchers. Unlike smaller producers, he had no need to share in public land. But he and his ranch hands did have their skirmishes, mainly with the Paulina sheep shooters, a particularly violent group believed to have butchered more than 10,000 sheep over a 3-year period. They were an offshoot of the Izzies and followed the same rules. They followed a strict code of silence, even agreeing to lie under oath if any of them were ever caught and brought to trial for their crimes. They accepted these vows during nighttime ceremonies that took place before a blazing bonfire. The Paulina sheep shooters were also known for their habit of renaming places where they made a major strike. The site of one of their largest slaughters they dubbed Battle Ridge. At another, they slaughtered a band of sheep as well as a herder's dog, the body of which was left in the creek. The spot has been known as Dead Dog Spring ever since. Bill's worst loss was a raid in 1903 when 487 of his sheep were slaughtered by a band of armed riders, believed to be affiliated with the Paulina sheep shooters, though this was never officially confirmed. The decade-long range war finally ended in 1906 when the U.S. Forest Service took control of the disputed lands and established range quotas for both cattle and sheep. The end of hostilities brought forth unprecedented prosperity for Old Bill, whose empire soon expanded to more than 36,000 acres, spread across Deschutes, Crook, Harney, and Lake counties. He controlled an additional 100,000 acres because he owned the water rights. His prized horse herds grew to number as many as 10,000, only a rough estimate because Bill kept no records. They ranged across the interior plateau from Buck Creek to the Wagon Tire Waterhole and were valued at upwards of $1 million. That's the equivalent of almost $17 million today. During the Great War, Bill sold horses to the Army of the United States, Canada, Great Britain, and France, often selling 500 head in a single day at an average price of $87 each. Buyers would then hire trail hands to move their newly acquired horses to the railheads at Bend, Crane, or Lakeview for shipment to California, Kansas, and East Coast ports. Bill Brown's was one of the largest privately owned sheep and horse operations in the country, with annual income that would have made him a millionaire several times over in today's dollars. Sadly, it was not to last. We'll tell you what happened next time on Can Be Done.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships. Whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology, Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Calvin LeSueur and Jamie Stickle. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the small businesses that support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episode. There are close to 300 kids in the Camby School District who don't have stable housing, according to the most recent estimates. In our next episode, we'll tell you about an amazing community program that has made a huge impact on housing insecure kids in Beaverton School District and is now coming to Camby for the first time. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Camby Now. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit CambyNowPod.com/plus.